Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Glenn Block. Glenn's a Microsoft Senior Program Manager in Windows Azure. He's working on cross-platform tools and SDK for Node.js and other languages in Azure. I'm going to ask him what that means in just a second, but we also have John Galloway, who's a technical evangelist on the Microsoft Azure team focused on ASP.NET. Glenn, how are you?
Ni hao, wo shi Glenn, wo shi Wei Ruan.
This is Glenn's way of telling us that he's in Shanghai at the moment.
Which means, hello, my name is Glenn, and I work at Microsoft.
That's very cool. John, you with us?
I am with you. And I actually understand a bit of that, partly because I chatted with Glenn and he got me up to speed. But I also, for a short period of time, was trying to learn some Mandarin with my daughter. We were doing a Rosetta Stone, and we got just about that out of the way. And then I know a few other words, but I don't know what they mean, and I'm not going to try and say them wrong. Because as I understand, the inflection, if you say the words up or down, can start a fight or whatever.
It changes everything.
That's cool that you did. We bought Rosetta Stone as well. I haven't used it as much. In the beginning, I used it. So you learned words like Nairen and Nuzhen and those kind of words.
Yeah.
Woman, Shue for water, and Cha for tea. But yeah, the tones are murderous. I know we're just jumping right in, but hey, that's how it is.
Set some context for us, Glenn. You're in Shanghai for how long?
3 months.
With Microsoft.
I am with Microsoft in Shanghai. Yes, I am.
And is it amazing? Is it as different as I think it must be?
It is fantastic. It is different. It is fantastic. I mean, it's got its ups and its downs, but mostly ups. And I have very warm feelings about Microsoft right now, because this has been like a life-changing, amazing experience being here. I'm here with my family as well. My wife's going to get mad at me right now for saying that, but, you know, because she's always very conscious of, don't tell people we're all there.
Okay. Are you living in the community or in more of an American compound?
This is not like a military compound or anything. I am living in the city in Shanghai, but I am living at corporate housing. It's kind of like a long-term apartment, it has people from all over the world though that are there, not just Americans, a lot of expats. But people that travel in from out of town, et cetera. And part of the deal of me coming here is Microsoft actually puts me up, and my family actually, which is fabulous.
And is it like Europe in that everyone speaks English, or is it much more difficult than that?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, that's been one of the big challenges here. I mean, it's like you go in a taxi. If you don't know how to say where you're going in Mandarin, in decent Mandarin, or at least like bring a map and show it to them like in Chinese, you're just not getting there. And you learn that very quickly when you first get here. So I've learned like the places I need to go, and I've been learning Mandarin. I'm not an expert or anything, but I can say things. Like in the morning, I can tell a taxi driver if I don't want to take the train, I can say, take me to Hongqiaolu, Gongcheonglu. And then if he wants to know where that is, I can say Gonghui. So what Hongqiao is a street, Gongcheng is a street, and then Gonghui is a shopping center near where the street is. And that's where I go to pick up the bus to go to Weiruan, which is Microsoft. But in the beginning, yeah, it can be really tough. And like you go to restaurants and stuff. So one of the things that has been really helpful actually recently, aside from learning a couple of words, and I mean, I only know, you know, enough to be dangerous. I don't know enough to really, the tones help me because I can tell taxi driver, like if I know where I need to go, I can say it and figure out, you know, explain it to him. But then if he comes back with a bunch of stuff, I'm just like looking at him, like, just go, you know, we'll figure it out and hopefully we'll get over there. But like I was in a restaurant last year, came out here for 2 weeks, and I wanted to get my daughter just milk. And milk is niunai in Mandarin. But what they had was iced tea with milk on the menu, but they didn't have milk on the menu. So I was sitting there and trying to explain to them, well, what I really want is milk. I want like the tea with milk without the tea.
Hold the tea.
Good luck.
say milk and I couldn't say tea. All I could do was point at these pictures, and I'm trying to, I'm thinking in my head of outlandish stuff, like I should act like I'm going to like milk a cow, because you basically do like charades here if you don't speak the language. And what I mean by that is, like, I've gone to department store with my wife. There's a great department store here called Carrefour, and we wanted to get a brush, just a hairbrush. And like, I'm looking around, I can't explain to them like what a brush is. So I just like take my hand and I like put it over my head, like I'm brushing my hair, like, and then they show you the direction. But what has become helpful now that I've learned a little bit more is on the Windows phone, which we have our Windows phones here, there's a Bing translator app. And that thing is actually awesome because I can put a phrase in it and it supports Mandarin. So I can put a phrase in it like, I want bread. And it will come back with, you know, waiyao, whatever the term is for bread. And then I can press the button and it will like say it. But I don't usually do that, but it'll show it on the screen. And so I just have to like not be bashful. And I can just show people the screen and then they can see what it was. That worked all great until I decided to dive into the pool with my Windows phone in my pocket.
Oops.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they're good, but they're not waterproof.
And then you didn't. Then you couldn't find your way home, right? You were stranded.
I know you're in trouble. Like, it's not a good thing when you're in a pool and suddenly you feel a vibration in your pocket.
You're like shutting down for the last time.
I want to take 1 second and point out that 10 years ago, to have a conversation with one person in California and one person in Massachusetts and a third person in Shanghai would have taken the resources of ABC News. And we just do this casually on Skype now.
And the lag would have, even on a great connection, would have been just impossible to talk.
Yep. Anyway, it's been an adventure here. I've really loved it. The people here are very gracious, very nice. There's not a lot of English speaking around here, that's for sure. But there's places much, much worse. I recently gave a keynote at an event in Shenzhen. And where I was in Shenzhen is a place where tourists just don't go. And there was no English. Like here, you might have some people that know English. And I was thinking about how spoiled I am because, like, I know people, I live in Seattle. Nobody there speaks any Mandarin. Like, I get upset because here only a couple of people speak English. But it's like, if I was speaking natively Mandarin and I go to, Seattle, unless I meet somebody who's Chinese, the likelihood that I'm going to have somebody who knows even one word, even ni hao, is really unlikely. So you get very spoiled. But there are enough people here that speak a few words of English. And every restaurant usually has the appointed English speaker who's not usually like fluent, but they know a few things. Like they know at least something enough to tell you we don't speak English.
Right. That's a useful phrase. So you mentioned that you spoke at a conference, and I know that you're organizing a conference. What is the conference that you're organizing about?
The conference, so it all started on Twitter. When I found out I was going here, you know, I've been very involved recently in the Node.js community and the JavaScript community. And there's this event called JSConf, which some of your listeners might have heard of, that's been popping up all over the world, actually. There's one that's going to be in Japan. There's one coming up in Ireland. A lot of them don't call themselves JSConf, but they say they're a JSConf-affiliated event, like TXJS recently, which was in Texas. That was a JSConf-type event affiliated with JSConf or using the JSConf name, even though they didn't call the event JSConf. So when I found out I was going here to China, I knew there were some Node developers here. I was kind of like, it would be pretty awesome to put on an event in China for JavaScript developers. And first, you know, because I didn't think that there really had been like an international one. And, you know, second, I just like creating lots of work for myself. I'm pretty much only happy when I'm overloaded with work that I have to do. So I tweeted, and this really cool guy, Troy Howard, who works at AppFog, responded to me on Twitter. Now, Troy lives in the U.S., but he lived in China for 10 years, and he speaks Chinese, actually. So we basically communicated over Twitter, and I was like, yeah, it'd be great if we could do this. And then Troy responded back. He's like, yeah, that would be a great idea. Of course, I had no idea, you know, talk about like jumping out a window without a parachute. I had no idea how this thing was actually going to happen. At that stage, it would have been easy to just let it go. But Troy and I connected, and we started brainstorming over Twitter on naming and ideas, and he came up with this name, WhoJS, because Who means Shanghai. It's like a fun name for Shanghai. So then when I got here, when I landed, immediately we started this idea of like collaborating on this event. It's been no small challenge, particularly because we wanted to get sponsorship from companies in the U.S., and getting money into China legally is not very simple.
And I'm happy to say that Telerik is sponsoring.
Telerik has stepped up at the last minute to be one of our sponsors, which is awesome. Microsoft is sponsoring. GitHub is sponsoring. And we've got a mix of international and local speakers. A lot of notable names in the Node community, like Charlie Robbins, Tim Caswell, Guillermo Roach. Some of them are all working through their visa issues, so not everybody on that list may be there. Visas are another huge challenge of coming to China. You don't just pick up tomorrow and say, oh yeah, great, I'm going to China. It's like a couple of week process because you have to get a visa and you might not get in, and there's a whole bunch of challenges around getting people here. So this has probably been one of the most daunting projects I put on myself. and I've had many sleepless nights and added stress. And hopefully when the event happens, it'll have been worth it. The idea of the event is to bring international and local speakers together. So if you go to our website, whojs.org, you'll see that on the speaker list, there's a real mix. There's local speakers and there's international speakers. And we've got local sponsors and international sponsors. So the idea is it's a 3-day event, 2 days hardcore JavaScript and Node, not just Node. We have some pure JavaScript speakers coming, like a talk on Ember.js, one of the GitHub guys who's going to do. Sarah Chips is coming. Steven Sanderson is coming, actually. He's author of Knockout.js. He's going to talk as well. So it's going to be really fun 2 days. And then the third day is going to be a hackathon. Hackathon is going to be really cool because it'll bring together kind of the international folks working with, the local teams hacking together, writing some JavaScript / Node apps. So it's been crazy, but it's also been really fun side project. And I think it's a good chance to build bridges with the Chinese developer community. And JavaScript development here is on fire. Node is not on fire, but there is a growing Node community here who we've partnered up with. There's actually a group here called CNode, and CNode runs these quarterly events they call Node Party. And they're backed by the eBay of China, known as Taobao. So one of the first things you learn when you come to China is there's these major technical companies. They're known as the BATS, the acronym, and that's Baidu, Tencent, Sina, and Alibaba. These are like the tech stars of China. And one of them, Taobao, is part of Alibaba. They basically are backing a lot of the Node efforts here. They're like eBay of China, and they use Node on the back end. So they've been one of our local sponsors. But I'm really excited about it because for me, in terms of my career, like I've helped with things like alt.net and getting that off the ground, but this is a whole different ball of wax. Especially when you don't speak the language. So I've had to have, like, I don't want to call them interpreters, but I got a local guy who's with me, who goes with me when I go to meet with different people, because he needs to translate to them if they don't. Some of them speak English, but some of them don't speak it that good, or they're more comfortable speaking it in Mandarin. So it's been a little bit of a, almost like a James Bondy kind of thing. And I've like 6 different parties on different things, from landing a venue to figuring out how we're going to sell tickets. And we've gotten a bunch of partners that have all stepped up to help us in various different ways, including how we get money into China. So that has been exciting and stressful, but it's been fun.
And can you talk a little bit about how Node.js lines up with Azure?
Definitely. So my whole focus, so I left the web API team. I was on the WCF web API team, which became ASP.NET web API. And at that time, we had this big reorg where we became part of Azure. And we were starting to really care about Node.js. And we were doing work at that time just to make Node.js work on Windows, because it didn't work well on Windows at all. And then once that work started to happen. The next thing we started to look at was, hey, like people are building Node apps and they're deploying to the cloud. Where does that sit with Azure? And at that time, there was nothing. As a matter of fact, the only thing that was there was Steve Marks had been kind of like a pioneer. Pretty much everything, anything you can think of in Azure, Steve Marks has done it like on a weekend one day, done a blog post on it. So he did a blog post on how to get Node working in Azure using his Smarts role. But we didn't have like a proper story that we were supporting and things like that. So I joined the team to help figure that out. And Steve worked with us and we came up with back last winter, we came out with a Node SDK for deploying cloud services, which is the traditional Azure model. And then we also shipped an SDK, which my team develops, which is a Node module that allows you to access Windows Azure services like Table, Storage, and Service Bus from within your Node application. So that was the first thing we did. Then in June, we came out with this next upgrade, which is a big upgrade to Azure itself, which is this new websites model that people love, which allows me to Git deploy applications to Windows Azure and also allows us to publish to Windows Azure from any platform. So my team built cross-platform tools written in Node that allow you to go on a Mac or go on a Linux box and create Azure websites that you can deploy to through Git. And we did the work to make sure specifically that Node.js worked well deployed in a Windows Azure website. So pretty much anything that relates to Node and Azure has been my team's focus, my immediate team's focus.
What's the appeal of Node.js as opposed to JavaScript, pure JavaScript? What does Node.js bring to the party?
In short, server. You don't write servers in client-side JavaScript. In Node, you're taking the skills you have for writing client-side applications and you're using them to build servers on the back end. But Node has much more appeal than that. Node is an inherently async model. It scales very, very well. It uses a very small memory footprint. It uses a very small physical footprint. Well, I don't want to say physical, but in terms of install footprint on the box, it's just a single executable. It has a really rich third-party module story, and it's also a very modern language. Like JavaScript is the language, but the stack is very modern. So it's been built from the ground to support a lot of common prevalent patterns emerged in web application development over the last couple of years. In particular, real-time web applications that utilize protocols like WebSockets to offer a really rich UI experience in the browser that feels like you're having a connected experience. So Node has a lot of that, but it also has a really rich ecosystem of just support for every kind of like open source stack or server stack you can imagine. Like there's probably 40 modules in Node for different databases, like NoSQL databases, MySQL, Redis, React, you name it. So it's just a super rich ecosystem. And it's also just very lightweight and easy to get going. I mean, a lot of times hello worlds are not that compelling, but in Node, people find it really compelling that I can write a web server in just a couple of lines of code. And on Windows, all I need is a single executable, which is node.exe, which I drop in a folder or drop in my path, and I'm ready to go to build a lightweight web server. But it does have a phenomenon to it. Like there's a hysteria around Node right now, there's no doubt. Much like there was a hysteria around Rails. But the hysteria around Node even exceeds that in the sense that Rails was never really known for scale, and Node is. Like you see lots of companies coming on board, like LinkedIn was one of the most prominent, Walmart, that have massive scale requirements, even Microsoft, that are looking to Node and saying, wow, Node can actually help us there.
So all of that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm trying to put that puzzle piece together with the piece of Azure. And was that a natural fit or was it that your team had to do some adaptation to make that fit together?
I think conceptually it was a natural fit. Like Azure is about deploying applications to the cloud. Why shouldn't it allow you to deploy whatever language or stack that you like? In practice, there was a bunch of work that had to be done to make that work. Azure initially was very favoring, Windows, .NET based type applications. That was its preference. But we've worked hard to teach it how to do new tricks. like, you know, PHP was one. That one was actually not so hard because IIS supports PHP. But just having a nice deployment experience for publishing a PHP application. But Node was a bunch of work just because you have to get Node running in Azure. And so we had to do a bunch of work first because of the fact that when you're deploying to a Windows Azure website or you're deploying to WebRoll, you're running in IIS. And Windows Azure websites run in IIS because they take a lot of advantage of the process management capabilities of IIS. So we had to build this thing called IIS Node that Tomasz Janczuk on my team built, which is a bridge that allows IIS to basically host a Node instance and talk to Node. Node has its own full-blown web stack, but in this case, it needs to be able to adapt to IIS. And so we use named pipes as a way of communicating from IIS to a Node running instance. So that was quite a bit of work, actually, scoping out how to get Node working with IIS. And then after that was quite a bit of work of figuring out, okay, so now we have that working. How do we get that working in Azure? And how do we get worker role support as well? Because worker role support, Azure has the ability to not host in IIS, to say I can just run some raw EXE that is handling my requests. And that's interesting from a Node perspective because Node supports WebSockets. IIS today until Windows 8, Windows 8 Server doesn't support WebSockets. So if you want to do true WebSockets today in Azure, the only way to do it is actually to use worker role. So we support the full gamut of options, but anyway, there was quite a bit of work on adaptation, definitely.
You were saying that Node.js is, that JavaScript is hugely popular in China. Node.js is still kind of, you know, entering the scene, which would make sense. I mean, you're putting together the first conference in that area. But I'm curious then, what is the scene like in two areas? One, in terms of the development stack, you know, if people, is anyone using ASP.NET? Are people using PHP? Like what are applications developed on? And then also just what's the state of the internet in China? I've heard it's very different than, you know, the broader world.
It's super prevalent here. You know, and it depends on where you look. There is some .NET. It's not a lot in terms of kind of the smaller startup-y type shops. And part of that is also because Linux is really big here. I mean, I go to event, you know, I've gone to some startup accelerator type events and stuff like that, and you just don't see a lot of Windows there. There's a lot of Linux. So I'm excited about the work we've done in Azure to enable Linux VMs and those kind of things, because we now at least have something to come to the table with, because, yeah, a lot of these guys are just not using Windows. There, in terms of development, PHP is big. Java is big. Those are kind of the two prevalent ones that I've seen. And .NET is here, but it's not, at least, I think in the bigger companies, you'll find more .NET stuff. But in a lot of the more grassrootsy types things, there's not a lot of .NET that I'm seeing here. And I don't think it's super prevalent even in the bigger companies. Like, there are companies that are .NET based, but it's, yeah, PHP definitely is the big one. Like, I've gone to a few different hackathon type things, and there's just a lot of PHP.
And then in general, Troy Hunt wrote, Troy Hunt does a lot of interesting internet security write-ups. He wrote something interesting about from inside of China, you know, that there's a lot is firewalled, that you can't reach things, that internet speed is a lot different. You know, a lot of assumptions that Westerners take to China, none of them apply.
Yes, you need a VPN. Like, you want to use Twitter, you want to use Facebook. I can't even get on, I think, my bank website without using a VPN here. So it's actually relatively easy to get a VPN, but it's harder to get one once you're here. Like, I didn't get my VPN before I came here, so I basically had to be on Microsoft Network to get a VPN so I could buy the VPN, because they block the VPN website. VPN is definitely needed. Internet speeds here are pretty horrible. It is my apartment, we have 1 megabit. Like, it's reminding me of, it's not ISDN, but it's not that far off. It's pretty bad. There is a plan to upgrade the infrastructure of Shanghai. Shanghai in particular has really bad internet, and it's known. And you know, they do have mobile phones here. You can get like China Unicom, which is the carrier which I use while I'm here, and that's okay. But still, it's definitely not fantastic. Microsoft CorpNet is better. But yeah, it's internet here is definitely a challenge, and the firewall, the great firewall, is definitely a challenge, which I poke through every day using my VPN. And I don't have to poke. Go ahead.
Just to understand that, what you're doing in order to get through that firewall is VPNing back into a server in the United States and then back out to do what you want.
Got it. Yep. They have VPN locations all over the world. The VPN that I use is strongvpn.org. By the way, they have fantastic customer service, some of the best customer service I've ever seen. You go on their website and they have a real-time chat and they're always there to help you. And kudos to them, because they were really, and they're really cheap too. I mean, I paid $30 US for like 3 months or something. That's another thing here. You know, the pricing is very different. Like some things are more expensive, but some things are so cheap, like taxis. You could be in a taxi for like 45 minutes here and it will cost you like $5 US. The taxis are so cheap, it's unbelievable. But if you buy Western food here, it's more money. If you buy the Chinese food, it's cheap. But if you buy like Western food, you'll pay more. Anyway, that was just a total random thing. Feel free to cut it. But the internet is definitely a big challenge. Now, it's been a blessing in disguise for me because it's taken me off of Twitter. Like, I tweet sometimes when I'm at work, sometimes in the evening, but far less than I used to. And I'm actually happy because of it. And my wife is.
So I have to follow up on what you said about their customer service. I went on to their site just to see what it was, and that was the tone you heard. I wasn't there more than 10 seconds before somebody offered to provide assistance.
And they're competent. I mean, it's not just about having, you know, sometimes you have somebody there, but they're more trouble than they're worth. But these guys actually are really good. They know exactly what to tell you. It's a shame that Windows Phone doesn't have VPN because, you know, Android does, iOS does. So like my wife has an iPad and I can put the VPN, I can get her on the VPN, no problem. I had an Android phone for a while. I can get on the VPN, no problem, but sorry, no Windows Phone. Anyway.
I'm no longer in the Windows Phone team, so I'm not going to take any kind of concern there. It does sound like that you're doing a tremendous amount of interesting work. And I guess the question that comes up immediately is, why is that work happening there as opposed to in Redmond? Was there something already existing in Shanghai that made that easier to do there?
Well, so we even haven't even talked about what I'm doing here. So we have an engineering team here. And one of the things that's good about having the engineering team here, it actually helps to improve Microsoft's relations in China. China is a different culture. It has a whole set of rules about it. And, you know, piracy and all this other stuff. And Microsoft have been working hard to really get, you know, deeper presence in China. We want to bring cloud at some point to China. And so having a presence here with a couple of thousand Microsoft employees in Beijing and Shanghai has done a lot, actually, for creating a warm, fuzzy feeling with the government, which you really need a good connection with the government to kind of get anything serious done here. So we have an engineering team here, and we have some folks building stuff for Azure here. And my mission while I'm here actually is not about this JavaScript event. That's just a thing I'm doing, trying to connect with the community on the side. But I am working, helping a team implement a new Azure service, which I can't talk more about. But what has been fun is they're actually using Web API for that service. So I'm kind of, being that I work on Web API, I'm kind of doing a lot of like Web API consulting, helping them figure out what the best way to do it is with ASP.NET Web API, and helping them with a lot of design discussions about how to implement the service and what things to do and patterns and other stuff. So that's been a great experience for me, because you often don't get the chance to work directly in this kind of manner for months with a partner on a day-to-day basis, you know, helping them with their code. And I do code reviews and other stuff that has been a lot of fun, which I would never have the chance to do, even if I was still on the Web API team. So that's been an incredibly interesting experience. And I'm happy to say that they're very happy with Web API. So that's gone well. So
explain briefly about Web API and what it is and what it offers.
John would probably do it better than John, right? Because he does a lot of speaking. Of
well, yeah, and I may have mentioned it when we talked last, Jesse, but basically it's the idea that over time in ASP.NET, people needed to build services or just, you know, for the web, people built services. So I think of like ASP.NET in general serving HTML that people are going to see on a web page. And then you write other things that run on a server that are not going to be accessed or viewed by people. They're going to be accessed by, you know, JavaScript or other services, and they're going to return like XML or JSON. And so then over time, you know, it was kind of painful to write them in different things. WCF allowed for a lot of opportunities, but took a lot of configuration and, you know, took a good amount of like understanding of how it worked. And then people started writing services. I saw people writing services in ASP.NET MVC because, you know, while it was targeted at building MVC or, you know, HTML, it gave you more control over the markup. And it was lightweight. So then what Glenn and team worked on was web started as WCF Web API and then turned into ASP.NET Web API. And it's a way of writing services. It has a very similar development model to ASP.NET MVC, but the goal is to create services. And some nice things about it, it's very convention-based. The controller actions map to HTTP verbs. So, you know, the interaction with, you can use it very easily to build RESTful services. And I know this is a long, long, Glenn, I've heard and talked to you before about, you know, the interaction of what REST means and all that. But you can, if you want to build RESTful services, Web API makes it a lot easier to follow those practices.
It's great for consumption by multiple different types of clients. That's a real goal with it, where it's non-browser, where the client is a mobile device, a native application, a native iOS app, or this or that. And one of the other things that is very nicely is it allows you to plug in different formats that are suitable for the client. So I'll give you an example. Like iOS devices natively know how to deal with this thing called plist. Plist is a certain type of format. There's Google Protocol Buffers. That's a certain kind of format. And it relates to how the data is sent across the wire. OData, another format. So Web API really has kind of the have it your way of making it really easy to plug in whatever formats you want to and detecting the features that the client is able to support based on communication thing, based on using the HTTP protocol, essentially. So that's another really nice aspect of it. But yeah, this is my first chance actually working on jumping back on a live service that's actually going to use Web API. And that's been a lot of fun. And aside from that, I've also been driving design or early investigation of a couple of different key features, which are not about Web API, but are just associated with the effort that's going on here. So that's been fun and different than what I normally work on. But I've also done a lot of mentoring, a lot of, I do a lot of public speaking. So I've done like internal brown bags on Node, you know, and I've got people from the SQL team that are here that are pinging me now. Oh, we want to do a Node library. So it's pretty awesome. People really like Node when they see it. So it's cool when, you know, internal folks get excited about it. So I do a lot of talks and I've done the, what's really cool here, by the way, John, I wish we had this in Redmond. They have this thing called, the space, and the space is like a bunch of hackers that get together every couple of weeks and just spend, you know, an hour and a half in a room doing these install fests, which means, you know, try something out, try out Cassandra, try out this, try out that. And we did two of them on Node, one on Node and one on Node on Azure. And that had a good turnout. Like each, the first one had like 40 people. The second one had like 20 or 30, and we just hack away and try stuff out. So there's been a lot of, I think, stuff that I've been doing too. I'm just educating people here on, you know, some recent things going on, like around Node and around Azure internally at Microsoft, and also mentoring. There's a lot of junior PMs here. So, you know, just spending time with them and just giving them, you know, kind of lessons learned over time, being at Microsoft, that kind of thing.
This was great, Glenn. This was amazing. And we could probably go on another 2 hours on each of these different topics. But this was a really great overview of some of the exciting stuff you're doing.
You know, it was like me. It was all over the map.
Yeah, literally and figuratively.